Bukowski, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation radio program Wednesday evening, coming to you a little early this week with so much going on. Why wait? Now, this, I know we spoke on Saturday, and on Saturday I said, just hold on to your hats and glasses, kids. We got to get to the bottom of this report, and we will know more in a matter of hours. Now, that turned out to be exactly true. It was a full day and some change later that William Barr, the Attorney General of the United States, produced his summary letter and delivered that to the Senate and to the House. And the letter, well, the letter basically said, as you now know, nothing to see here. Said, for one, there's simply no evidence of collusion and not enough evidence to charge on obstruction of justice. Now, of course, a lot of long faces over at the Clinton News Network. I, on Sunday, had a little family dinner at the house with the news on. I had to do it. I turned on CNN for a few minutes and just, I think they had a panel. I want to say it was a panel of maybe eight people. It was a wide angle shot. You know, I've got a big TV in the family room, and it filled my big screen from side to side. And it looked like a city council meeting. And they all looked about as enthusiastic as during the public Q&A. They were miserable. They were miserable. They all looked like they had just eaten half a bottle of Tums. The agony was palpable, and deserved all of it. Deserved. Rachel Maddow, who, as you know, is the Boy Wonder host on MSNBC, her ratings through the roof, capitalizing on this nonsense yarn being told about Trump somehow colluding with Russia, right? Okay, so, I mean, what does she have to say now? Literally, what, 60% of her nightly program just went into thin air? You gotta almost feel bad for these people. But fear not, most of these people are in very blue states, so I know we have a social safety net in their respective cities and counties. I want to remind y'all of a quote from Chuck Schumer. Now, if you know, Chuck Schumer is now the Senate Majority Leader, a wily politician. I know he's on the left, but you know he is a sophisticated player. And I say this because, you know, sort of the antithesis of a Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I mean, Chuck always knows the right way to get at things. And I don't know if you remember this, but all the way back in January of 2017, before Trump was even inaugurated, right? So election was November 2016. And early January, when Presidente Obama was still the jefe in chief, Chuck Schumer said this on The View. Now, I didn't play the audio. I don't have the audio here, but I'm going to read it to you. It's almost more effective if I read it to you, because he said this. He said that President-elect Donald Trump is, quote, being really dumb, close quote, by taking on the intelligence community and its assessments on Russia's cyber activities. Quote, let me tell you this. You take on the intelligence community, and they have six ways from Sunday at getting back at you. Sorry, I said this was on The View. It was actually on Rachel Maddow's program, of all places. So he says this on Rachel Maddow's program. Now, kind of interesting now, as you look back at all of these acting intelligence officials that conspired clearly amongst themselves to concoct this fiction novel this spy thriller that had Russian, prostitutes urinating on some bed that Obama had once upon a time slept with. Slept, maybe, I don't, that's a slip. Slept on, pardon me. I don't know if Michelle was there, but nonetheless, I mean, you could go back in the library of Sam Nation. And I would remind you from when I first heard of this story, this dossier, Christopher Steele claiming that this had happened, that there was a Golden Showers incident in Moscow at a fancy hotel. And I thought, you know, the little I know about Trump, man, this guy doesn't even like to shake hands. He's such a germaphobe. The idea of urination, this is Trump. It's not R. Kelly. I mean, unbelievable, right? So the whole thing was so ludicrous. But I am convinced, friends, convinced that these guys got together, that, what's his name? Orr, Bruce Orr, and Christopher Steele, Clapper, James Clapper, all these guys, the determination was made, the more outlandish, the more sensational, the more likely this is to get some traction. And then, do not ever forget this, this ridiculous dossier ends up in the hands of that cretin from Arizona, John McCain, who instead of taking it through proper channels and having it vetted, holds on to it and submits it in such a fashion to guarantee what could have been a mortal wound to the president. So I always want to bring it back to John McCain because he was urged by his colleagues, led by Senator Graham, to not do what he did with it. And he carried it around he who the gods wants to destroy, they first make angry. And this was absolutely something that all these people, it is, and by the time the dust settles on this, a sick conspiracy. But how interesting is this admonition from Chuck Schumer? He surely knows. Now, a very experienced politician. And it begs the question, right, for you and I to ask as citizens of this country. Boy, I wonder what the folks over at the CIA get away with. And I don't mean in the truly conspiratorial sense, but I mean, what kind of, do they get any funding requests denied, or do they ever get told no on things that they really want by members of Congress? If members of Congress are literally telling the president-elect of the United States, man, how dumb are you for going against the intelligence community? They have six ways to Sunday to getting back at you. Sounds like Schumer knows. I would not be quick to dismiss this as an idle comment. And I remember hearing it at the time and thinking, yes, we know where this is headed. Little did we know that the plan to take down Trump was already well underway and had begun in the late stages of the 2016 campaign. So where is this going now? What's happening? The report has been summarized by Barr. Do not, if you're a liberal and you want Trump destroyed, I mean, you really want him drawn and quartered, right? Let me give you some psychological advice here. The sooner you move to the acceptance phase of your grieving process, the better. Because Attorney General William Barr, it did not lie in his letter to Congress. Barr is an establishment guy. He's not some Trump true believing radical. He is a guy who is taking a measured approach. I guarantee you he went through this whole thing and he made a determination and he made a summary. And it's not like this report in the thousands and thousands of pages. I read somewhere it was 2,000 pages, but it's not like buried on page 1,700, 69.5 is a recommendation by Mueller that Trump be indicted on X charge. It's not like that. These reports are written. They have their own summaries built in. You do realize that, right? There's an executive summary that is put together by the attorneys that wrote the report. Moreover, and we learned this too this week since we did our last program, we learned that that Mueller had communicated in advance with Barr about what the findings were and let Barr make the determination of whether any charges were to be filed. Now, Barr is, you know, this is a politically charged deal. His exposure is great. He's going to follow recommendations of the special counsel. Now, if the special counsel isn't making any recommendations, he's going to follow the letter of the law with all eyes on him. And I'm telling you, there's nothing there. And do not read in. And let me give you a little, like, little just bit of lawyerly insight here. Prosecutors charge crimes they think they can win on. If a prosecutor thinks they can't win on a crime, can't win on a set of charges, I mean, there's really nothing there, right? I mean, unless you're Jussie Smollett, and we will get into that, unless you're Jussie Smollett, and there's hanky-panky from top to bottom. A federal prosecutor, especially in a charged environment, these guys on the Mueller team, the Mueller probe, these were no Trump fans. These were not MAGA guys. These are all inside the beltway, left wing, for the most part, attorneys. We've gone through it ad nauseum here on the program. So don't think for a minute if there wasn't enough to make a charge, there wasn't enough. And I am so sick and tired of listening to all these talking heads say, well, it doesn't mean that there wasn't any obstruction of justice. Well, I mean, you're right. I suppose there were some traces of obstruction of justice, i.e. a sitting president firing an FBI director who is an appointed position serving at the pleasure of the executive branch of the president. But I guess that's you know, there just was nothing there, guys. Nothing at all. And that is why they didn't charge. So the interesting thing now is really just the aftermath and the amount of wind that this puts in the president's sails politically. I think it's the end of this probe looks 700 days of this, millions and millions of dollars spent, and a big nothing at the end. Now, it is my absolute firm belief, and judging by the comments that have been put out by Lindsey Graham and others who are in oversight positions in Congress, I expect that the Republican Senate is going to open and lead an investigation into the investigators. And I'm not talking about Mueller's office. They're going to be exempted. They're going to be exempt from this. But I am talking about Clapper. I'm talking about Brennan. I'm talking about all the D-bags at the FBI, including James Comey. I know. McCain got out of testifying. He's all cool. But there are going to be people are going to go down for this. I hope so. There has to be justice. And that's what makes this just infuriating from top to bottom. So I know. Okay. Yeah. When we come back, right before the Mueller report dropped, right? I finished the program here. I'm watching the news. I'm seeing what all the hubbub is. Remember on Saturday when I spoke to you, and that would have been around, we did the program here about noon, I believe. So noon West Coast time on Saturday, we had a pretty good idea of what was going to happen. And yet, I'll just share it with you. Brief montage that producer Robbie put together. Brief montage of the hysteria preceding the release of the report. And you can, well, it's pretty explicit, but I think you can just, you can really savor the denial that our friends on the left were in. and delight in it, please, because, you know, Schadenfreude is one of our specialties here on the program. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Barbara Bush had blamed Trump for her heart attack. Did you hear about this? So there's a guy who's writing a biography on the former first lady. And as you know, she passed away recently. And as part of his research into Barbara Bush's life, he was given access to her diaries. Apparently, he read all of her diaries that go back, I don't know, however many decades, which I bet that was quite riveting. So also of note, Barbara Bush kept a countdown clock on her nightstand, allegedly. Well, according to, you know, this guy, he spent a lot of time with her before she passed and read her diaries, whatever. So a countdown clock on her bedside table, on her, you know, in her bedroom, counting down the days and hours, minutes, maybe seconds until Trump would leave office. You know, can I just point something out as a guy, as a human being? Now, this is not a political observation. But don't you get the impression that the people that hate Trump, that they're obsessed? They are obsessed, and it's personal, and it's all-consuming. You know, I myself have the pleasure right now of having locked my antlers with an opponent. And someday I'll be at liberty, folks, to share the whole story, and it'll be a riveting program when I do. But I can tell you this. I don't keep pictures of him on my nightstand. I mean, this is weird. I don't, well, pictures, reminders. I don't, you know, I don't want to give him any headspace more than I already have to. It's the first rule of living a good life. You control the things you can control and don't worry about the things you can't. And it's, you know, it's this type of obsession, right, that has led to the reporting, for example, on Trump, right? I mean, the media is just, I think that you're right. I think this is all by design, right? I think that Trump has poked the bear, and the bear is now frothing at the mouth, and the bear is self-destructing before our very eyes. Roll the montage, Robbie.
If someone walked in my office and said I was a subject of a multi-year criminal investigation led by former FBI Director Robert Mueller, I'd wet my pants.
To believe that the president isn't compromised requires such a leap of faith.
I think we have all the proof we need of a scandal that's arguably worse than Watergate.
There is tons of proof of potential collusion.
We have dramatic evidence of collusion.
How is it not collusion? How is all of that not collusion?
Donald Trump knows the noose is tightening. The noose is tightening around the president.
The noose is tightening.
And I think they're shocked that the noose is tightening and that people might go to jail.
He knows he and POTUS are going to prison.
Well, I think they're all going to end up together in prison. And maybe that's a good thing.
Oh, my God.
The noose is tightening. Problem is it was a Jussie Smollett noose. It was a fictitious noose. By the way, no problems with the media using noose imagery with orange Americans. Just a no-no with black Americans. Okay, I got it. We here on Sam Nation, we try to make sense of the day's news. You see, this was all hours and days before this report came out, and we had already, for weeks, maybe a couple months, been hearing sort of some rumblings, some quiet whisperings from the Mueller camp that not to expect anything great. They were talking this thing down way before they released it. But these people are so obsessed that they're blind to all of that and they become believers. They are no different than your friendly neighborhood religious zealot. They don't want to hear about anything real, but they live for the sincerity of their beliefs. And the only problem is that these beliefs, consume them in an unhealthy way and do not advance them in any particular way. Let me take a quick break here. There's more Barbara Bush stuff. This is wackadoodle stuff here, and I'll share some of it with you when we come back. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, hang on. I'll be back. Don't go anywhere.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rogowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, fighting dilatory obfuscation by making radio great again. Boom. Let's do this. Barbara Bush blamed Trump for her heart attack. I told you about that. But this is a direct quote. Putin endorsed him, for heaven's sake. Really, this comes down to Trump running against Jeb and George W., right? A large part of Trump's campaign, even though Trump's immediate predecessor was Barack Obama, remember, a lot of the campaign was fighting Republican politics as usual. Trump took on the entire neoconservative establishment. And the Bushes, who are neoconservative to their very core, could never forgive him for this. So she had the countdown clock, Trump to leave office, which was on her supposedly on her bedside table when she died. No irony there. She talked at length to her biographer about no longer identifying as Republican. We heard a little bit about this during the campaign because the Bushes let it out that they had voted for Hillary. Now, I need more answers here, but I'm going to read the book and get back to you. But my understanding, perhaps, is that the Bushes were trans Republican. I don't know if that's a thing. I mean, they were born Republican, right? They were born, but we can't say that anymore because you can choose your party. It turns out you cannot. Right. You don't want somebody to just party you, right? You don't want to be you don't want to have your party identification to be assumed. So they made a choice and they chose to leave the Republican Party and identify as something other than Republican, which is unclear. I don't think they identified as Democrats. I think independents, maybe anti-Trump. They identified as anti-Trump. So, that's good. We actually in this country, I think, have more gender identities than we have party affiliations. That's a very uniquely American thing. And you know, if you've been to Europe or anywhere else, you know what I'm talking about. There's a party for everything. There's the dog party. There's the cat party. There's the three-legged cat party. But here in America, you know, fewer parties. But obviously, you know, we still can choose. So that's good. Something I told you on Saturday, I don't like to do this often, but I told you so. There's a great piece, a Reuters article from today, I believe, earlier today. And the title of the article is "The Mueller Interview That Wasn't: How Trump's Legal Strategy Paid Off." And I told you this was the big takeaway over the weekend. if it was true, and it turned out to be, that Mueller was not recommending any charges against Trump, had Trump sat down with Mueller and answered questions and be allowed to just talk, it wouldn't be obstruction of justice. It wouldn't be collusion. But it would be it would come down to a statement charge lying to a federal prosecutor or a federal agent. That's what it would have ended up being the same thing that got all these other people in deep trouble. Here's what it said. Mueller spent 22 months investigating whether Trump or his aides conspired with Russia during the 2016 election, interviewing 500 witnesses. The president and his lawyers made sure he was not among them. The strategy paid off, insulating Trump from the legal jeopardy presented by a sit-down interview with the special counsel's team, an interview that Trump had said publicly he wanted to do. And this was exactly my point. It was a play. It was a charade. It was a game. He was telling everybody, I'm going to sit down. Ask me the questions. I want to do it. At the same time, they were playing, they were stringing Mueller along. Yeah, we're going to get to you, man. Don't worry. Yeah. Okay, well, send us some questions in writing first. Well, we'll send us some, send us your questions and we'll give you some written answers and then we'll go from there. And this ended up, and now, of course, they're writing about this as a brilliant strategy when of course, a month ago, the story was how incompetent and bumbling Trump's lawyers were. So in the end, in business and politics and everything, the proof is in the pudding. You can't argue with success. It clearly worked. It was a good strategy. I identified it last week before any of this was quite out. But this is a key takeaway from this experience. Don't talk to the fuzz. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Well, I can't resist getting into this Avenatti craziness for a minute. Here's what happened. Avenatti tried to extort a company called Nike. I don't know if you've heard of Nike. Nike is big. They make shoes. They make shorts. They make shirts and other athletic gear. And they were doing something, apparently, we don't know, allegedly, involving giving money to student athletes where you're not supposed to give them money, but really it was... whatever. They're giving money to some student athletes, supposedly working around the system by funneling money to their parents in a sort of endorsement, not endorsement deal, and it violates some laws. We don't know, by the way. We don't know if this is true, but this is the allegation. So Avenatti, being the intrepid legal eagle that he is, swooped in on this and went to Nike and in writing, my God, in writing, proceeds to tell Nike, hey, if this gets released, your market cap will sink by $10 billion minimum overnight. He writes this explicitly. So, pay up, give me a little retainer, and I can make all these problems go away. Again, let me give you some insider perspective on this. As a lawyer, a legal demand and an attempted extortion, there's a fine line. There's a fine line, right? But typically, I'll tell you, the good rule of thumb as an attorney is that you threaten to sue people on behalf of a client. So what you need to have is you need to have a client who has a wrong. You need to be representing that client And you've got to limit yourself to the really the only tool at your disposal. I mean, as a lawyer, you can't threaten to kill somebody, right? That's not what you do as an attorney. You have to threaten to sue them. You can't threaten to have them charged criminally. You can't threaten to have them charged, you know, or have, you know, have their whatever professional organization they're a member of look into your practices. You can't do any of this nonsense. You are limited to saying, OK, my client has X amount of dollars in damages. Pay me X or I will sue you. And Avenatti, if he had half a brain, would have framed this shakedown in those terms. Instead, he writes them an email, I'm not effing around. I promise you pay me. I mean, he's basically like, he went full gangster on them. Now, I have been telling you for months now that Avenatti's a dumb A-money-money. I've been telling you this. I'm telling you as a lawyer what he's doing is dumb and it's ruinous, right? And let's rewind the clock here. Go back in time to when all was well between him and the porn star. So the porn star says, oh, I have this, you know, I comes to Avenatti. She's his client, right? She comes to him, Mr. Attorney. I'm a porn star. I slept with Mushroom Penis Man. And I, you know, it seems to me, I don't follow the news too regularly, but he seems to be the president of the United States now. I guess, what could we do an acronym? MPM. MPM had, you know, he had this lawyer. His name was Mike Cohen. And Cohen, you know, that guy's a loathsome toad. But he had me sign an agreement. And now, Avenatti's a lawyer, right? He looks at the agreement and he says, this is nonsense. This agreement, we're going to toss this out. We're going to go public. We're going to say, and poor porn star goes along with it. She says, oh, okay, all right, well, you lead me, you beautiful man. Now, around the same time, of course, Avenatti starts a divorce proceedings with his wife, separates from his wife. Gosh knows what kind of weird A-money-money stuff was going on there. But any lawyer worth his salt would look at the agreement and go, you know, this is probably going to hold up. Wait a minute. Let me understand this. You promised not to talk. Okay. You were paid not $10, not a dollar, not $1,000. You were paid over $100,000. That's real money. So courts, by the way, really look at this when it comes to agreements and contracts. They always want to make sure that there's been adequate payment. And that makes agreements far more binding. You got to understand this critical point. Makes agreements far more binding. And Avenatti really overplayed his hand, and it's resulted. What is the porn star? What is she? Trump now $10 million. Ouch. You know, she can make fun of his manhood all she wants, but thanks to Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels has to pay Trump $10 million for sleeping with her. I love it. Only in America. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
And gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, you know what the most important thing about Avenatti is? That now that we've seen that he's really a sham of a lawyer and completely, the thing with Nike, it, like I said, it could have been done a little more artfully and it wouldn't have crossed the line. But what I have to remind you all of is that it wasn't that long ago that serious people in the media, I would say all on the left, were talking about Avenatti as a potential 2020 contender. He was a darling of the media circuit. He was going to all the shows, doing all the appearances. I mean, the guy was everywhere. There was a great gag I saw over the weekend. Well, no, Monday. This news broke on Monday. And it's the best 24 hours. Trump gets exonerated and Avenatti is arrested. But yeah, on Monday, the news breaks and somebody quipped, you know, he went from Avenatti 2020 to Avenatti 20 to 25. And it was that quick, but it was, you could see it to anyone who could stop and look objectively at what was going on. They would have seen it. But people are blinded by their hatred of Trump. So much so that when a lawyer comes along with what I really believe is, I look at Stormy Daniels, what do you see? I mean, I see, you know, I see her as a kind of a victim of his. You know, she comes to this attorney who's got some star power and wants to see if she can, I mean, a good lawyer is going to tell her, honey, don't do this. I think this more likely than not, this agreement you have, this NDA, non-disclosure agreement, is going to be binding. And you have liquidated damages. That's a fun legal term. Do you know what that means? It's when the damages for the violation of an agreement, for example, are specified in the agreement. So if you break this agreement, we now, at the time of the signing of this document, agree to these X set of damages. So I think it was like $1 million or $100,000. What it was? It was a big amount per breach of the agreement. I think it was $1 million per breach. And so a judge determined that she owes Trump, you know, millions of dollars based on the number of breaches. And there were way more than 10. So I don't know how they settle on that. Probably cut it off at some point. Nonetheless, that's what liquidated damages are. But my point is nobody in the media would hit the pause button at any point and say, you know, this guy really isn't behaving well as an attorney. And he's certainly not representing his client well. The left uses people and chews them up and spits them out. And to the left, Stormy Daniels was a useful pawn. To Avenatti, she was a cash cow, right? For Avenatti, it was self-promotion and media gigs and that he can monetize. But, you know, for the media, they were his accomplices in this. And they went along with this nonsense and they used her. And now she's done. She's gone. She's spent. She owes a bunch of money. And what did she tweet out over the weekend or after this all broke? She goes, oh, you haven't seen anything yet. There's more to come. Stay tuned. Speaking of staying tuned, I'll end this Avenatti business with poor Joy Behar on The View talking on Tuesday, a day after Avenatti was let off in cuffs, about her disappointment.
My first reaction is rather sadness, to say the truth, because here was a guy that brought Stormy Daniels to us. And so it was good. I liked it. It was like, oh, good. We have somebody here who's going to tell some of the truth about this criminal that we have running the country.
Right.
So I'm sad that this is all happening now, because I know that Trump would use it against him to glorify himself and to make himself look better. So I don't like it.
Do you see that? And in this clip, you hear exactly what Avenatti was good for. He brought us Stormy Daniels. And Stormy Daniels doesn't matter to Joy Behar one lick. Doesn't care about the porn star. She doesn't give a crap about her. All she wants is to use Stormy Daniels to tell some of the truth about this criminal, Donaldus Maximus. Well, I hate to break it to you, Joy, but sex isn't illegal in this country, no matter how you cut it. NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, aren't illegal. There's nothing that Trump did with Stormy Daniels that is illegal. You are a despicable person for aiding and abetting this criminal, Michael Avenatti, okay? For abetting him in his use and abuse of this vulnerable woman. Shame on you. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, back right after this, getting into the Jussie Smollett case. This is upsetting.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say, this was their finest hour.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation. All right. Jussie Smollett, the person that nobody knew anything about. I guess if you were a diehard fan of Empire, you would know of him. I think he plays a relatively minor character. Well, nonetheless, you know the story. You know that one fine winter day, Jussie Smollett claimed to have been assaulted by two MAGA hat wearing white racist bigots. Who, did they pour hot sauce on him? I mean, they did all sorts of horrible things. Bleach, hot sauce. There was some rope. It was a horrifying deal. And it prompted, interestingly enough, it prompted even a rebuke from Trump, which normally, normally Trump stays out of the fray and doesn't really comment on these things. I remember noting this at the time. It's just odd that of all the times that Trump really does wade into this and issue a stark condemnation, it turns out it's not real. And that's exactly what this was. And this ridiculous decision by the office of the state attorney for Cook County. So this is the way it works. This is the state prosecutor's office that is responsible for Cook County. They made the decision, right, to not charge Mr. Smollett. Now, this was just bombshell news yesterday, and had everybody absolutely up in arms about it. You know it's bad, okay? You know it's bad when the response from Rahm Emanuel, probably the most progressive, one of the more progressive politicians in the country, when Rahm Emanuel, mayor of Chicago, is apoplectic over this. And let's start with it. Here is Rahm Emanuel yesterday at a press conference. The press conference was long. There was a lot of things said. I've followed Rahm Emanuel from the time he was in the Obama administration as chief of staff for President Obama. And look, I followed him for a long time. This is the most animated, the most frustrated, the most viscerally upset I have ever seen him. Play the tape.
He did this all in the name of self-promotion. And he used the laws of the hate crime legislation that all of us collectively over years have put on the books to stand up to be the values that embody what we believe in. This is without a doubt a whitewash of justice and sends a clear message that if you're in a position of influence and power, you'll get treated one way. Other people will be treated another way. It is not on the level from beginning to end, and there needs to be a level of accountability throughout the system. And this sends an unambiguous message that there is no accountability, and that is wrong.
He's right. It is wrong. And the decision was made by the office of that Cook County prosecutor. Now, this lady's Kim Fox. What do we know about her? She is to the left, I think, of the biggest leftist you could ever imagine. I don't know. This lady has run, I mean, it's an elected position, so she runs on a platform that is absolutely anti-police, right? She also is extremely lenient on crime. There's a number of high-profile cases of people that she's made the decision, her office has made the decision to let loose. Most recently, there was a parolee who was had some charges pending against him for a domestic dispute. And, you know, domestic violence, cops, if you know police, you know, domestic violence actually is one of the most dangerous calls to respond to. So apparently this guy had been charged with DV. He was out on parole, and they removed all the parole restrictions. And so he was out and about, got into a fight with somebody, pulled a gun, began shooting, and ended up killing an off-duty cop who was shielding his girlfriend from the bullets. This is a recent case that happened in Chicago. The news, I always try to get you ahead of the news cycle, that all eyes are going to be on this woman. All eyes are going to be on her team. And I think mind you, this just is happening. This is a real time thing. And I just minutes ago saw that the FBI is investigating her office. They're not necessarily looking into pressing federal charges against Smollett, but they're opening an investigation, an influence investigation into the office of the state attorney, supposedly. Well, obviously, next time we meet and we talk, we'll know more about that. But the what seems to be the case is, so the lawyer for Jussie Smollett is a California attorney. I don't know if you know this. Her name is Tina Glandian. Now, Tina Glandian, it just so happens, is an attorney, an associate attorney at Mark Garagos' firm. Now, who is Mark Garagos, you ask? Well, I am glad you brought him up. Now, he's been on the Smollett deal from the beginning. He's a bit of a gadfly. Garagos is famous for losing high-profile cases. Scott Peterson, right? I mean, granted, Scott was guilty as hell, but nonetheless, did not get a lot of help from Garagos. And Garagos also most recently has been in the news as the unindicted co-conspirator of none other than Michael Avenatti in this Nike shakedown scheme. It's hilarious. You guys, the plot is thick here. And my suspicion is that the timing couldn't be worse. I guarantee you that this Kim Foxley, now she recused herself in this and had a deputy, you know, make the decisions, blah, 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 blah. I guarantee you that when the dust clears on this, heads will roll. Possibly hers. And I'll tell you why. I don't think she understood the amount of loathing that even the left have for Jussie Smollett. Because for the left, they so wanted to believe that Smollett had this happen to him and that it was these evil white Trump supporters that had beaten him up and had hurled these awful racial epithets at him, right? And they wanted to believe it. And the fact that it turned out to be nothing more than a self-aggrandizing career assistance move by Jussie Smollett. I mean, people were furious. And I think we played originally the press conference held by the superintendent of police, where he said, I mean, and you could feel the emotion coming from him, that as a black man, the superintendent is African American, but he goes, as a black man, having experienced real racism in my life, am so profoundly offended that another black man would make light of real suffering of people and use it for his benefit in this way. And I just I just think, and it goes back to my general thesis here and how blinded and myopic liberals get. Because within their own zealous echo chamber, their decisions sound perfectly logical. But of course, we're going to let Jussie Smollett off. I mean, we're going to let him off. You know what? He's gay. He's black. He's a minor. You know, he may not have suffered the racism here in this instance, but this was a manifestation of real experiences he'd had in the past. And for us to punish him for this would be grossly unjust. And by the way, they didn't just let him off. They sealed the whole record. There's no trace. It's as if this hadn't happened. And the only thing they did is they kept the $10,000 bail that he'd posted to get himself out of jail. And it's a drop in the bucket to the hundreds of thousands of dollars in overtime, in just overtime, that the Chicago Police Department spent. Actually, here is the Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson, when I was just talking to you about. At the same press conference, he was standing next to Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, and this is what he had to say.
I'm sure we all know what occurred this morning. My personal opinion is that you all know where I stand. Do I think justice was served? No. I've heard that they wanted their day in court with TV cameras so America could know the truth, even though they chose to hide behind secrecy and broker a deal to circumvent the judicial system.
I think the deal is dirty. It's my gut on this. My gut is that it's a dirty deal and something stinks and there is some influence, political influence. And Rahm Emanuel, you got to watch him to see how viscerally angry he is. And I suspect, friends, and nobody's saying this right now, but I suspect that he feels stabbed in the back by the Obama political machine. Remember, Rahm and Barack, they were besties. You know, he left the administration early and there was some rumor of falling out. But Michelle Obama, her inner circle, their fingerprints are all over this thing. And my prediction is that this touches the Obamas. And I think Rahm Emanuel is so angry that this case that mattered to him, that mattered to his officers, that mattered to his city, they were going to show that no one is above the law, that Chicago is a place of law and order, and that they were not going to become a national laughingstock as somebody who lets this kind of chicanery play out. To have the rug pulled out from underneath him. And, you know, by the way, this is well documented. There are text messages right now, or I should say, you know, screenshots of chats between aides of Michelle Obama and this state attorney, right, Kim Fox, directly discussing the Smollett case. And the Michelle Obama people are on the inside representing, I don't know if that's the right word, advocating on behalf of the Smollett family. I am telling you, it stinks to high heaven. And as I compared the Rahm I know and I normally see, even when he gets upset about stupid things, quote unquote, stupid things Republicans do and political opponents and things like that, the anger here was so real. And I do think he feels betrayal on this thing. So we will tell as time will tell, and this will all play out as it will. But I intend to follow the story to the bitter end. All right, friends. I know it's a midweek, midweek show here, but. I will get back to you as soon as I can. Let's do that. That's the promise I'll make you. I'll get back to you as soon as I can. I love doing this. And maybe as we continue here, we should do podcasts more often on a more regular basis. So we will. Robbie's looking at me very panicked. He's so is Dr. Audio in there. Let's just have our staff meeting right now. Should we do that? Let's just do it on the podcast. Transparency, that's what we are. No cook counting nonsense here. Sam Marjofsky, over and out.